This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil, now streaming, only on Hulu.
Charmed, and welcome back to Let Me Ruin Your Life with me, Serena Shahidi. Hello, I hope you're doing well. I hope you're doing fabulously. This episode is brought to you from my bed, which I kind of like. I've done this before, and you know what I like about it? Because this might be my new thing. I really like, it feels like one of those FaceTime calls where you're talking to a friend, and maybe they're doing something, they're making pasta, perhaps they're salting the pasta water, and you're just sort of talking at them for a very long time. Maybe you had a big day, maybe something exciting happened and you're telling a story. Maybe you just found out something negative about someone you hate and you just have to share. But either way, they're a little bit busy and they're just kind of and you monologue. I think that's kind of what I'm going for. And I hope that's how you feel. Maybe you're making pasta. Maybe you're grilling chicken. Maybe you're scrubbing your sink area. Maybe you're painting your nails. Who knows? But I hope you're having a great time doing it. I just had a very humbling experience. I thought I was having issues with technology, as I often am. I thought I was having an issue with this microphone that I'm using to record right now in this moment because I couldn't hear myself through my headphones. And so I called up customer service, I waited on the line, and then I got on the line with someone. I said, listen, I'm having issues. I can't hear myself through my headphones, and I really need that. I said, I really need to hear my voice. I said, I have a stunning voice. I said, I love myself, and I said, I love my life. And I don't know if that last one was true, but I do want to hear my beautiful voice. And they told me, they said, okay, why don't you open up system preferences, and why don't you click on sound? And while you're at it, why don't you make sure that you've selected the right output and that the volume isn't all the way down? And I said, that's very helpful, thank you. I'm going to go about my day now. And I have. And it's important to move on and just continue rolling with your life, even when you have just found out that the issues you thought you were facing were just a matter of you turning your volume up when you can't hear something on your computer. Anyway, I went to Staten Island recently. Yesterday. For the first time, it was my first experience. I was doing something out there, and I had a full day in the island we like to call Staten. And I had so much food. We started, 11 a.m., pizza, calamari, an Italian egg roll, which I didn't know existed. Let that digest a little bit. Later, sandwiches, cookies, cannoli, rice balls. Something along the lines of a fried mashed potato concoction. I swear I can still feel it weighing me down. I'm feeling a little sluggish. And it takes a lot. If you're under the age of 25, your lifestyle choices and the things that you put into your body, it takes a lot to fuck you up. I have never related in my life to the people who are like, well, I started eating fruits and vegetables and stopped chugging aspartame every day and now I feel better. I don't. I never do. And in a way, that's great because I can do whatever I want. In a way, it's not great because there's kind of no hope. But anyway, but I had heard a lot. Staten Island has quite the reputation. If you haven't heard tell of it, I'm sure you have. And I had always heard it described as a trash dump, just where the rest of New York City dumps their trash. I didn't realize, by the way, did you guys know this? That that's literal. That there's an actual dump there where New York City's trash goes. I don't know if it goes there anymore, but there's still a dump there. So I guess in that sense, it's correct, but I mean, I was really expecting, the way people talk about Staten Island, I was expecting, as soon as I walked onto it, or I bust onto it, ew. No, as soon as I got off the bus, which was very nice, the bus is a luxurious experience, clean, there's places to plug stuff in, it really is a lovely time. I was expecting somebody to, like, grab me and forcibly tattoo me. I genuinely, you know when people say, oh, my parents caught me smoking a cigarette, so they, like, brought me down to the basement, and they made me smoke a whole pack of cigarettes, and I threw up. Which, first of all, hilarious thing for a parent to do. But also, I thought that somebody was going to do that to me. And alas, I get onto Staten Island, and honestly, it's fine. It's fine. It's a very right-wing place, especially, I mean, compared to the rest of New York City. I don't condone that. I don't condone the Trump flags. Don't think that I do, all right? But that reputation they have, it's no worse there than any southern town. Or not any southern town. It's no worse there than the average southern town, I would say. As someone from a town in North Carolina, Staten Island, it's a suburb with Trump flags flying. Here I was listening to my friends, many of whom come from luxury in the city, talking about how Staten Island is the worst place in the world. Go anywhere. Go to, I mean, just about anywhere else in America. They got dumps there too. People who are used to, like, living with money in New York, they think anywhere near New York that has houses instead of apartment buildings is the absolute scum of the earth, circle of hell, disgusting place. It's really crazy the way they discuss it. As if most of those people don't have more room than them. Let's point that out right here and now. Anyway, so I'm still a little bloaty baloney, but I'm here. I'm alone. Alone in bed. I hope you guys liked the last episode with Tess. We had a lot of fun recording it, even though it was kind of a bitch to edit, because when you're recording something with your best friend, the amount of incoherent discussion, because, you know, when you're close to someone, you kind of make up your own language, and the amount of gossip that you just can't put out onto the internet, it's a lot to cut out. We had a lot to bravo, 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 but I thought it was a really a fun episode, and I wanted to ask you guys, and okay, I'll try to make this quick, because this is, like, not interesting, I'm just asking a question, and I guess, because on Spotify you can ask a question and get responses from it, so I'll put that there, but I really want to, you know, improve this podcast, improve Let Me Ruin Your Life, not that it's awful right now, okay, but I feel better creatively, and I feel better in day-to-day life when I'm really putting out creative stuff that I'm very proud of. And even though I think this is fun and something I very much like doing, I don't really put out episodes and think to myself, killed that. Killing it. So please tell me, you can tell me on Spotify, or you can DM me, tweet me, whatever you want to do. Let me know from this podcast, what do you want? What do you want from me? If you care to share, you certainly don't have to. You could just keep listening, listening, consume, consume all you'd like. But if you care to share, let me know, do you like the current format I've been doing recently that's just miscellaneous nonsense? Do you want a theme for every episode? Do you want it to be very silly? Like, all silly? Or do you want sort of an audio essay, something with a real thesis statement that's also a little bit silly? Is there anyone in particular you want on for me to talk to? Because I would love to put out more stuff, do bonus episodes or something like that, but I think that would have to have a little bit of a format, a theme. What would you want from that? Reviews? Current events? A little advice column? I don't know. I have a lot of questions, but if you have an answer, an opinion on any of them, LMK. LMK me. Let me know me. Yeah, I've just been thinking a lot about the future of, I don't know, creative stuff. The future of the pod, other stuff I want to do. I've been thinking about the future in general. I think it's because I'm going back to school later this month. If you don't know, I'm going back just taking a few classes, marketing stuff at FIT. Going back to the school I dropped out of. None of you can judge me because I know you've gone back to an ex. I don't usually double dip, at least not with relationships, but I'll do it for school, why not? And I'm glad to be going back. Hopefully I'll get more of a sense taking classes, figuring out what I want to do. Although, you know what? A great piece of advice that I probably read on Tumblr in 2015, I remember reading, it's not what you want to do, it's who you want to be. Focus on that. And isn't that great advice? Because people talk about finding a path and they talk about finding a purpose, but what they're really talking about is finding a career path. And I respect that, it's something you gotta do, but I don't think God or the universe or whoever put you on earth and was like, okay, this person is gonna be a software engineer. The universe doesn't know about the job market. They don't know what's paying well these days. No offense to software engineers, that was just the first job I could think of. All my respect to you. I hope your job doesn't get replaced by AI. I know that's a real possibility. Schools are like banning that AI chatbot because kids might use it to write essays. And honestly, good for them. That 5-paragraph bullshit they make you do. I would use AI too. My God. That's basically what they're asking for. If you don't want kids to use AI for their education, don't assign things that could be done by AI. How about that? I mean, I guess you have to in math and all that, but as far as essays go, stop assigning writing that can be done by a robot. That's not good for children and their minds. What was I talking about? The future. Yeah, I feel like as a 23-year-old, 23 is kind of where you get to the age, I feel like, where you realize that life is real. Or at least that's been my experience. It's also the age where people expect you to have things figured out. Pfft, who are we kidding? This, for me, is the age where I realize, oh, I need to eventually have a path. This is not when I'm planning out that path at all, let alone when I've figured it out, I've finalized it. This is when I'm realizing, oh, I have to do things in life. That has just occurred to me. In life, you have to do stuff. I'm glad, though, that I'm letting myself be messy in my 20s. Because, you know, I see people my age getting married and stuff. And I just feel so much gratitude that I have respect for what this sort of era of my life is. I'm really glad I have that. Because there are people my age getting married, committing to a person for the rest of their life. And I know a lot of people see stuff like that and they go, oh, I feel so old. People I grew up with are getting married. I mean, first of all, I grew up in the South, so people I went to high school with were getting married like the week after graduation. They were saying their vows at their graduation dinner. And that kind of stuff doesn't make me feel old. It makes me feel just bewildered, I guess, because I know how young we are. We're so young. I mean, I still feel like I'm 16. And I think everyone kind of relates to that. That is such an age where you're feeling so many emotions and you learn to deal with those. But I don't think the emotions that you're feeling at 16 and the fears you have and the things that are really weighing you down, I don't think that ever changes a whole hell of a lot. I still feel like I'm emotionally just a 16-year-old, like I'm in my mint-colored bedroom in North Carolina, reading Rookie Mag, and crying and dreading going to school the next day. That's still who I am on the inside. Does that ever go away? Let me know. If you're older than me, let me know if you ever stop feeling 16, because I don't think that's gonna happen for me. And I'm fine with that. I like, there's something so special about the intensity of the emotions that you feel at that age. Do you remember the crushes you used to have in high school? They would consume you. I haven't had a crush on someone in years. I've had people I've dated who I liked, but I haven't had the experience in such a long time of looking at somebody and being like, ooh, I wonder if they're into me. I wonder if we're gonna get together. At this age, it's just like, yeah, we are. And so what? But I don't judge anybody for getting married really young, especially when you have such a cultural expectation of it. I guess it's less so cultural right now, generally, than it is in specific circles and in specific families, which is so unfortunate to me. I think really pressuring your kid to get married is one of the most efficient ways, not necessarily to fuck them up, but I think in particular to fuck their life up. A lot of the people I know who are really horrible at dating, and God, I know a lot of them, so this is not a hard and fast rule because they're all different, and that's a large population to study, people who are bad at dating and unfortunate in their love life. But I think a lot of the people I know, they experience that because they grew up with families who were like, you gotta get married, you gotta get married, you gotta get married. And now they're either terrified of commitment because they're like, that's not my path. This isn't my dream, Dad, it's yours. Or maybe more often they are desperado and not really willing to date around and give it time. I'm so glad I grew up with a mother who was like, dating is fun. It's supposed to be fun. Date a bunch of different people. Get in different relationships. Ride on the back of maybe a Spanish man's Vespa. Which I haven't done, but let me add that to my to-do list, because it doesn't sound half bad. Yeah, I'm thinking about the future. I read my tarot cards the other day. I read a past, present, future, because my parents got me a tarot deck for Christmas. And yesterday it said, your future, it said, you're going to slay in the future. And I said, thank you very much. And I really trust this deck because the first time I did a reading on myself on Christmas Day, when I received it, the past card was someone crying in bed. And I said, yeah. I thought to myself, yeah, that's right. And then it told me, you got to start planning things because you haven't planned a single thing. And you know what? That's correct. So I suppose it's right. And I suppose I will slay. Anyway, enough about the future. I want to talk about beauty. Can we talk about beauty? I'm always fascinated. I mean, I was always fascinated by, like, fashion history and trends and how they reflect what's going on socially and politically and, I mean, culturally, obviously, and economically, which is crazy. The Hemline Index, obsessed. But, I mean, beauty is the same way. And I stumbled upon an article called The Craziest TikTok Beauty Trends to Come Out of 2022. And I want to talk about it because I think they're interesting. I mean, first of all, they don't mention, maybe because this is plastic surgery, but they don't mention, I believe it's pronounced buccal fat removal, which has been causing quite a stir. If you don't know what it is, which I imagine that you do, but, you know, you get the fat removed in your cheeks, below your cheekbones, makes you look all sculpted and chiseled and contoured. And there's been a lot of talk about that and what it means about society. And I've been thinking a lot about plastic surgery. I mean, I feel like I just do think a lot about plastic surgery because it's such a concerning thing. But it's also something that so many people, including people like me who think it's not a great thing in general, people are down to get. They're down to get it. And I've been thinking of if I ever want to get plastic surgery, and I've sort of come to the conclusion that I want to be natural. Maybe some Botox, okay? But that's different. I mean, I don't think that you should be getting your face frozen at 20 years old so you can look like that forever. But also, Botox is not the same thing as fillers. fillers are like specifically for your appearance. Botox, I mean, I got that a year or two ago. And I didn't really get it for anti-aging. I mean, I was like 20, 21. But, you know, for the same reason I got on antidepressants. I wanted to stop frowning all the time. And if we're being honest, and I'm sorry, feminism, and I'm sorry, big pharma, Botox works better for that purpose. It just does. It's the unfortunate truth. But anyway, I want to be natural until about the age of 65, 70. And then, ideally, I want to look like Joan Rivers overnight. Absolutely overnight. I don't even want anyone besides the medical professionals to see me in between the time that I look like a normal, natural 68-year-old and the time that I look like Joan Rivers. I want it to be night and day. Because the way that older women talk about being attractive and the attention that they get or may not get, at a certain point, you stop being looked at all the time and considered pretty, which it's sad that we think of aging as this unfortunate, unattractive thing, but there's also a freedom to that, as a lot of people have pointed out, that there's less of a pressure to be pretty because you aren't getting that kind of attention anymore. You don't really feel the need to keep it up. And I think when you're older, that's the time to really experiment and get real avant-garde with your appearance. That's why I love it so much when old women wear so many colors and so much fun, extravagant stuff. The Iris Apfel of it all. You know, if you're not going to be pretty, you might as well be an art piece. Obviously, going under the knife, kind of an extreme version of that. I don't know if I'm actually going to do it when I'm 70, but it is a bit of a fantasy of mine. And it's hard to be anti-individuals getting stuff done, because we're all living in this patriarchal society that values women for their looks and thinks that they absolutely decay when they get older and everything has to be perfectly right in your appearance. It's much more the fault of people who push that beauty standard. But I'm also not going to say, do whatever makes you feel good. Do whatever empowers you. Because I don't think it's going to make anyone feel good, and I don't think it's empowering. Because the thing is, if you're a woman, people are always going to say that you're ugly if they're just being a hater. You can get your nose done, but if it's not going to be your nose, it's going to be your lips. If it's not going to be your lips, it's going to be your eyes. If it's not going to be your eyes, it's going to be your wrinkles, and so on and so forth. The people who want to call you ugly are going to call you ugly. It doesn't really matter even what you look like at a certain point. It's just that if you have maybe a feature on your face that's maybe a little bit wonky or something's the matter with it, they have more of a leg to stand on calling you ugly, but they're still going to call you ugly no matter what. Do you remember? Oh my God. This was like years ago, but when Megan Fox was like really, really big as a sex symbol, people would go, oh, she's so beautiful, but you know what? Ugh, those thumbs. She has clubbed thumbs. Who gives a fuck? That's crazy. See what happens? You can be like the most perfect. You can be famous for being beautiful, and people will still look at you and be like, look at that fucked up thumb. Because there can always be something. There really can. Now we've gotten to the point where we're all trying to optimize our appearance. Like I said in the last episode, like we're trying to optimize ourselves for productivity and dopamine and all that stupid shit. We're trying to optimize our looks as if we aren't people. Like we're a little sim. You can always find fault in yourself if you're a person. And so what? Who cares about your thumbs or your cheek fat? Anyway, the actual article. The craziest TikTok beauty trends to come out of 2022. I want to discuss a few of these. The first one, oh my God, I've said this before. I was so mad when I found out about it. The red nail theory. This is the theory that if you paint your nails red, men will like you. basically. And what I said was, I've been painting my nails red, and I don't want to be associated with this nonsense. I don't want someone to look at me and think I'm participating. But what I think is funny about this, and, you know, I'm a fan of seduction, but I'm also a firm believer that you should stick with the classics. Bat your eyes. How about that? Bat those lashes. Those $12.99 Ardell wispy lashes from Walgreens. Good for you, but you can't life hack your way into someone being into you or someone being attracted to you. As you shouldn't. You really want to be getting ready to walk down the aisle and think to yourself, oh, I'm so glad I did that TikTok seduction tip. Otherwise, he never would have liked me. I would have been an old maid just sporting periwinkle nails or some disgusting thing. If it takes a tip from TikTok to get someone into you, just walk away. Just leave. I'm a firm believer that attraction is just sort of a thing that happens. It's a very subconscious thing. And it's something we've really evolved to do. I believe that someone should get a little whiff of your pheromones and be on their hands and knees panting like a dog. It shouldn't take any sort of life hack. It should just take, maybe you're like sweating a little and they're like, I'm into that scent. Meow. When did people stop saying meow? Let's get back to it. Because I've thought it. I really recognize that emotion when I look at someone and I think, meow. But I don't say it out loud. I'm going to start being brave and speaking it out loud. The next trend, another nail trend, glazed donut nails. Have you guys heard of that? Have you guys heard about this? I've never heard about this. But it's a nail trend that is basically just a shimmery light color. When did very simple things start trending? I feel like this is a new development, and I like basic stuff. I don't mind a little, oh, this is just a light color with a sparkle. Whatever. That's what it is. It's cute. But what makes it a huge trend, I wonder? I think it's maybe now that young people or people who aren't that into fashion have use the internet to really be involved in fashion and create trends for the first time. I think there are a lot more like fashion icons for more normal people. Like I see a lot of young people talk about how Hailey Baldwin is like their fashion inspiration, and they'll show a picture, she'll be wearing a white t-shirt and jeans. Like the model off-duty look, which is just, it's just that. Like a regular outfit and sneakers. But now the fashion and beauty have become so accessible to everyone. Now people who don't want to wear eccentric things and just want to dress like normal people, now they have their little fashion icons, and now that kind of stuff is trending. I saw an article that was like, blonde hair is over. Brown hair is in. Okay, I'm sure much of the world will be thrilled about that. What do you mean brown hair is in? How many people have brown hair? Like, I don't know. In the United States, half the population? What are we talking about? Brown hair is in? What's next? Brown eyes? What's going on? That being said, I like basics. Don't get me wrong. I love a basic. Actually, shout out Ryan Finn at That Adult tweeted and actually quoted me below it. They tweeted in response to someone who was making fun of this person who was like, I just bought this top and it's my dream top. And it was a white tank. And they were like, damn, we really don't value basics anymore. And it's so true. Like, shouldn't your dream top or whatever it is be something that you want to wear forever? I would say my dream nail color is red. Not because it's trending, but because I want to wear it forever. That's a dream right there. I don't want to hate on basics. But it's very interesting to see them incorporated into the trend cycle. Anyway, the next beauty trend, slugging. This one I have seen, and I don't know how dermatologists feel about this. It's definitely not eco-friendly because it's, you essentially slather your face in Vaseline, just straight from the oil industry to your face. And they really go at it in these videos I've seen. They slug, slug, slug. Not great for the planet, but you know what? I don't hate the idea. Because it feels very like Marilyn almost. You know how she used to use just a basic cold cream? There's a certain utilitarian glamour to that. Marilyn also famously drank for breakfast milk and raw eggs. Maybe that'll be the new trend. That's kind of glamorous. Utilitarian glamour. Anna Wintour's, like, lunch that she eats every day. That $200 slab of meat on some arugula or whatever it was. I don't really remember. That's the new thing, because now it's glamorous to kind of be a caveman. Now the corporations are taking over our life and it's way easier to gain access to these crazy processed foods. Now the ultimate status symbol is having a caveman lifestyle. I guess slugging doesn't really apply to that because it is oil. But still, kind of funny. Last one, we have, this is new to me, siren eyes versus doe eyes. This is like two different ways to do eye makeup. It's essentially like siren eyes, which is sexy, smoldery, cat eye, versus doe eyes, which is a big, cute, innocent eye. And I am obsessed with this and what it says about us, because these are literally like Art of Seduction Robert Greene archetypes. If you've read that book, if you're enough of a manipulative bitch to have read that book, me, I probably have a dog-eared too, Jesus Christ. But if you haven't read it, it's a book about how to, not necessarily like literally seduce someone sexually, but how to seduce someone in the sense of like manipulating them. And the way you do it is you kind of find out what's missing in their life, what they're craving, and you create this character. You embody this archetype that gives the illusion that you can fill that hole, basically. For example, if there's one, I think it's called the star. And it's, I mean, it basically is what it sounds like, as someone who's the star. They're the center of attention. They're really putting on a show. And like that probably would work. Like, I mean, this is just a guess I'm making, but I'm guessing that that would work on someone who's missing a little bit of magic and excitement in their life. They need a star in their life. And that kind of manipulation is used to get stuff out of people, obviously. But now there's this pressure for everybody to market themselves, now that we're all on social media, market themselves as a brand and create or embody an archetype like that. And some people need to do that in real life. Like if you're a celebrity, you really have to create a persona. But regular people, do we all have to become a character down to our eye makeup? I don't think private individuals should have to do that. Like, what is up with that? Why are we all trying to find a niche? It's weird. We're people. Also, clean girl makeup was on this list. I'm not going to talk about that because I've talked about that. I've talked about that. And it's kind of the same thing. It's attempts to kind of brand yourself and to make sense of yourself as a person. And to be like, this is who I am now. I fit in a Pinterest board. And it's simple. And it's clean. And I'm a clean, clean girl. But the truth is, you don't fit into that mood board. Someone can psychoanalyze you and keep a file on you in their little filing cabinet, and you're still not going to fit in that. Let alone a picture of some girl in a towel drinking a green juice in her white apartment. It's not that simple. I wish it was. It would make things a lot easier. But what are you going to do? I want to talk about rom-coms. Can we talk about rom-coms? I've been catching up on a lot of the classics because I've always been a big fan of rom-coms, but I always went for like the early 2000s, like over the top ridiculous ones that aren't particularly known for their good writing or being culturally significant. And I think the reason I'm drawn to them is because they were so heavily marketed towards women. Like in the 2000s, there was so much talk of chick flicks. Oh, I forgot I bought a book from the used bookstore about chick flicks. I should read that. That's fascinating. But we don't really talk about chick flicks anymore. It used to be such a big thing of like, these movies are for women, or they're for women to drag their boyfriends into the theater and the boyfriend is going to have a horrible time. That's what they're for. And I think they could have so much more fun with those movies when they're targeted at women. And it could be over the top and it could have all of this fun fashion. And now they're trying to market stuff to everybody and it's boring now. Most of them, anyway. I like to set it up. Most of the modern rom-coms, they're boring. Because they're not just for women. I want them to just be for women. Or people who appreciate that feminine, fun, silly, 13 going on 30 thriller dance number in that dress. They don't do it like that anymore. So that's what I normally watch, but I've been catching up on all the classic rom-coms. And I've been having fun. And I watched Notting Hill for the first time. I mean, I wouldn't even bother talking about His Girl Friday because it's just, I've just been obsessing over Cary Grant recently. And I will talk anyone's ear off about him. I will say, bring back the screwball comedy. His Girl Friday is a must watch. But I also, okay, I watched Notting Hill the other night. Nobody talks about that. Nobody ever talks about that movie. And you know what else they don't talk about? Hugh Grant. He is charming. I'll be the one to point it out. He's charming. And I would say he is floppy-haired with a boyish charm. I'll go ahead and say it. And I didn't realize that the line that everybody quotes was from that movie. I'm just a girl standing in front of a boy asking him to love her. I mean, wow. It's a beautifully delivered line. It really is. That being said, I watched that and there was maybe a second and a half where I went, oh, that's wonderful. And then that ended and I thought, if a friend of mine came up to me and told me that she said that to a man, oh, I would need to talk some sense into her. Oh, that's awful. That's humiliating. But Notting Hill was a turning point for me because for the longest time, I thought I hated British humor. I really thought I hated it. And there are certain parts of it that I still don't like, even after my Notting Hill revelation. I don't like, this happens in a lot of British sitcoms, where they'll sort of abandon clever writing and clever dialogue to be like, look at this situation. Isn't it getting out of hand? This situation is getting crazy. Isn't that funny? No. No, I don't think so. I don't think it is. I don't like when that happens. Sorry, Brits. Kisses, kisses. But what I do like about their humor, I like the dryness. I like the darkness. I like the humor they get out of pathetic situations. Because Americans, oh, we have such fragile egos over here. We really do. The scene in Notting Hill where they're, all the Brits are sitting around a dinner table. All the Brits except for Julia Roberts. They're sitting around a table and they're basically having a competition to be like, okay, who has the most pathetic life? And it was very like, well, I'm unemployed and I am completely alone and I always will be. But you know what? Aren't you barren? Is that true? Are you barren though? I'm sorry for the accent, Brits, but you know what? You guys grew up watching American television. You had a head start. We didn't grow up watching British television, and you know what? For good reason, sometimes. But now I'm like, why was I so defensive of American humor, of all things? I don't... What even is, like, mainstream American humor? Deadpool? I don't like that shit either. I don't blame anyone one bit for not liking American humor, but you know what it is that I didn't like about British humor is I used to really, really hate self-deprecation. I used to hate it because I thought it was low and it was just for people who are insecure. And I think it could definitely be used that way with people who are insecure and they just want to point out their flaws before anyone else has the chance to. Or they want to say bad things about themselves because they're like, well, I don't want you to think that I think it's okay that I am this way. So I'm going to make fun of it. There's definitely a certain type of self-deprecation that can come from that. But you know what? Also, on the other hand, if you can't joke about something, it's because you're uncomfortable with it. If you can't make fun of yourself for, like, having a certain quality, it's because you think it's, unspeakable. That being said, I've always thought you shouldn't say things about yourself that you would be uncomfortable with anyone agreeing with. Do you know what I mean? Like, I think, like, self-deprecation should come out of a place where you're like, I am willing to make fun of myself for this because I'm willing to speak about it, acknowledge it. That's not going to be the end of the world for me. If you're making a joke about how ugly you are, I think you should be at the point where if you make that joke and someone goes, you know what, now that you mention it, yeah. Now that you mention it, there is something the matter with your face and body. And I'm glad we're discussing it. Let it come out of comfort. That's my revelation that I got from Notting Hill. Is that I want to apologize to the British people out there. I'm sorry. I'm sorry for what I was thinking. Well, some of it. Anyway, I also watched Sleepless in Seattle for the first time, which I had never seen because everyone talks about it almost the way they talk about Titanic, where it's like, oh, it is so romantic and sappy. And I guess Sleepless in Seattle is less sad, but you know what I'm talking about. And I think, stay with me, I think that's misogyny. Because when I watch Sleepless in Seattle, honestly, in my book, it's a lot more calm than rom. That's what I got from it. I think it's crazy that Nora Ephron was known more for romance and not for humor. Because it is like a very well-written comedy film with some sappy moments and a happy ending where two people get together or assume to get together. You know what? That's an Adam Sandler movie, basically. Is that not an Adam Sandler movie? I mean, it's a little less silly. It takes itself a bit more seriously, but, you know, what doesn't? In Nora Ephron films, the comedy is right there, front and center, and the romance is more almost implied. Almost implied. Saying a Nora Ephron movie is just like straight up romance, that's like saying a TV show or a movie with a little brief sex scene is pornography. I mean, you could see it that way, sure, but that's not what's primarily there. That's not the real appeal for me at the end of the day. Oh my God, there was such, the best line from Sleepless in Seattle in my book is when Tom Hanks's character and his son, they're walking through the airport and the son is trying to convince him to date Meg Ryan's character. And he's like, listen, the stars are aligning. This is meant to be. This is fate and you've got to do it. And he goes, the reason I know this is because I'm younger and more pure, so I'm more in touch with cosmic forces. Brilliant line to give to a child actor. Incredible line. By the way, I googled that child actor, and he's a car salesman now. I don't know whether to be happy or sad about that. I guess happy, because he got out of child acting. I don't really know what being a car salesman consists of. I guess it's definitely not a bad job. I guess I'm just thinking of it that way, because it's not a job I would want to do. And everyone is me. Everyone has my exact interests. I think Nora Ephron, and I love her writing. I read recently one of her essay collections, Wallpaper at the Orgy. So good. But I just feel like she really gets humor as a person. She's almost sort of a Norm Macdonald figure in my mind, in that she just totally gets comedy. I remember reading a quote from her that was like, when you slip on a banana peel, people laugh at you. And like, it's their laugh to have. But when you tell people you slipped on a banana peel, it's your laugh now. And isn't that so true? Reclaiming it. No shame. Being comfortable enough to speak things out loud and make it your laugh. She gets it. She gets it. Okay, last thing I want to talk about. This is going to be kind of a short episode. But the last thing I want to talk about is I was on a certain site I like to call variety.com, and I found something out that was so important, so significant to me. I found out that they, as in Hollywood, they're making a film adaptation of, wait for it, Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret. And on top of everything, Rachel McAdams is playing the mom. I can't remember the last time I was so excited for a movie. Is this how everybody else feels about the Barbie movie? Don't care. Give me Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret. If you didn't read that book when you were growing up, which, by the way, you absolutely... I mean, I guess it's hard to say that you should now, because it's something you really resonate with when you're in middle school. But you should have. And if you have maybe a younger sister or a daughter who's in middle school, you gotta give her Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret. What a book. It's about this girl in sixth grade who starts praying. Even though her family isn't religious, she starts praying. She goes, Are you there, God? It's me, Margaret. Every chapter starts with a prayer like that, where she's usually asking for something. She's like asking to, I think she was really into like, give me my period, God. Where's my period? I think she does get her period. That was probably like the climax of the book. I don't know. But I read that book when I was the age to be reading that book, and I started praying because of it. I started praying because of it. And not only did I start praying because of it, but I specifically did, Are You There, God? It's Me, Serena. I sure did. You better believe it. Do you think God heard that and was like, another one of these little bitches? Yet another. They weren't even religious before. They read one book. Now they're asking if I'm there. No. I'm not there for you. I think I actually, after that book, I think I literally tried to read the Bible. Because I've said before, I come from a very agnostic family, but I have a father who's fascinated by religion. He asked for a rosary for Christmas. I mean, I gave it to him, but what the hell? He, like, keeps the Bible on his desk. Because I guess he likes the stories. What an interesting man. I don't know. But I took the Bible off his desk. I tried to read it. I found out it's not nearly as riveting as Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret. And I put that down. So I did not successfully read the Bible. I did not convert. I was not baptized. Or whatever needs to happen. I don't really know. I like the Natasha Leggero joke where she's talking about everything she did to have to convert to Judaism. And she's like, to convert to Christianity, you just need to like walk into a lady footlocker or something like that. That's probably true. But I did not walk into that lady footlocker. I just started praying and being like, please, God, can it get better for me? Please. I was a very sad child. I look back and I was a very hopeful child. Like I was, you know, asking God for stuff. I wasn't like, this is hopeless. But I should not have been that sad as a kid. I mean, Jesus Christ. I remember when I was younger and I was really, I don't know, I just wasn't enjoying life whatsoever. I was very sad. I was very anxious. And I decided to kind of do my own self-help. Like I came up with an exercise and I was like, this is going to help me. I'm going to do this. And I started keeping a journal of things. It was like a 2-column journal where every night I would write for the next day what I was dreading, 3 things that I was dreading, 3 things that I was looking forward to. Because in my mind, I was like, okay, if I write down what I'm dreading, then I could recognize that. I could leave room for that emotion and respect it and feel it in my body. But that's what they would say now. I probably was not saying that to myself, but same idea. And then I was like, okay, if I write down what I'm excited for, that's like gratitude, that's positive emotions. And I gotta say, it's so sad. I must have like been in elementary school when I was doing that. When I invented my own self-help program. Like, that's so sad to me looking back. But you know what? It helped. I think I remember it helping. I think it did exactly what I thought it would do. And it made me more okay with the things that I was not looking forward to and more excited and grateful for the things I was. Maybe I should go back to it. Honestly, I think that might be good for me. If anyone's looking for self-help or something to do, if you're thinking about reading a self-help book or getting a life coach or something like that, you don't need that shit. Listen to my fifth grade self and the self-help program that she came up with, because it wasn't half bad. Also, you know what else needs a film adaptation? So I was a big reader when I was younger, but there was one series in particular that I was so into. And it wasn't like a typical young adult series like The Hunger Games or Twilight or Harry Potter or Percy Jackson. Who cares about that? I was never into fantasy or anything along those lines. No dystopian, no utopian even. I liked those real, relatable, gritty books that would talk about all sorts of embarrassing, real stuff and very matter-of-fact language. Come to think of it, I don't think my taste in books has changed at all, because that's still kind of what I look for in a book. But the series that I was so into, oh my God, did you guys read the Alice books? The Alice books. I think they were by Phyllis Reynolds Naylor. I think that was the author's name. God, I remember there was even an address that you could write to that was on one of the books where you could get a free poster, and I wrote into it, and you better believe that poster was on my wall, of Alice and her two best friends. Oh, I loved that series. It was about a girl named Alice who, her mother had died when she was young, and she was being raised by her father who owned a music store. Or I think, this is ridiculous that I still remember this. I think he didn't own the music store, he managed it. I don't remember most of my life, but for some reason I remember what this character's dad exactly did at the music store in these books that I read years and years ago. That's how important they were to me. And she had her two best friends who were very, like, it was a sort of Samantha and Charlotte character. The Samantha was named Pam, I think. And the Charlotte, I want to say, like, not necessarily Elizabeth, but a name along the lines of Elizabeth. And you know exactly what I mean. And then there was Patrick, her on and off boyfriend throughout the series. And Alice was sort of always humiliating herself. She was always having all these embarrassing moments with toilet paper on her shoe and tripping over herself and perioding all over her jeans. All of this stuff that's very relatable when you're young and you're not only in a time in your life that consists of a lot of embarrassing moments, but you also just are embarrassed by everything. You remember being in middle school and, like, going to the store and being like, ugh, I'm at the store. Don't look at me. This is humiliating. I can't believe I'm doing such a thing. So it was such a coming-of-age story. I think I learned what sex was from reading the Alice books, because I never got the talk. But I specifically remember reading one of those books, and her dad was giving her the talk, and I was like, what goes where? And why? Because I was in elementary school and I was just clinically addicted to these books. I think they started to come out, I mean, probably in the 90s or something. And the series, it was a very long series. It ended around the time that I was finishing it. I probably, like, I don't know, middle school for me or something. And the final book, like, caught up to the rest of her life. Oh, it was so good, and I learned so much. That needs a film adaptation. Get on it, Hollywood. There actually was a movie about it, starring Alison Stoner, and I did watch it. I streamed it illegally on my mother's laptop, and I had the time of my life. Maybe that, should that literally be my plans for tonight? Rewatching that movie, streaming it illegally, but now on my own laptop. 'Cause we're moving on up in this world. Yeah, I might have the desire to watch the Alison Stoner movie based on the books that I was reading when I was 10 years old, but I would do it on my own laptop because I'm an adult. That's all I have to say for today. I don't have any more words to share. That's all that has to come out of my mouth on this particular day. But anyway, as I said, let me know below or wherever, DM me. Let me know what you want from the pod, if there's a specific format you're into or a person you want on. And thank you for listening. I hope you had fun. I have to go pray to God. Bye.